Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Goddess Alive Radio. My name is Kimberly Moore, and I am the founder of Mother House of the Goddess and your humble hostess for this evening on Goddess Alive Radio. So delighted to be here. And, you know, the Sugar Plum Fairies are dancing around Mother House. We're sitting here, or I'm sitting here. I say we in the, you know, goddess sense of the word. So we are sitting here with altars alit and incense smoking and the Christmas tree glowing. And out to the western horizon, I see a gorgeous Isis crescent moon. Absolutely beautiful. I'm just in awe. Of course, it's like 81 degrees, so I'm hot. All right, so that makes me a little cranky sometimes, but I know everybody has been, talking about how much heat there's been and everything up in the East Coast, and so nobody's really having winter, except for Albuquerque, Ann Key, Catherine Ravenwood, and all my lovely goddess women out there. You guys have snow, and Utah, you guys have snow. I know because my nephew took off in 80 degrees this morning and landed in a foot of snow. He's pretty happy, though, and I'm a little jealous. So I just have to tell you, it's a weird El Nino kind of year. So for everyone who will soon be in the deep, dark depths of winter, enjoy your warm weather perhaps now. I think I might be able to turn off my air conditioning this weekend, so that's going to be really good. So we are on the countdown, my darlings, to winter solstice, to Yule, to the Christmas holidays. We're in the midst of Hanukkah and, all the other amazing holidays. I think I saw on Facebook somewhere that somebody said there are 29, like, cultural, religious, secular, whatever, holidays at this time of year. And that they say happy holidays to include it all. So I agree. I kind of agree with that because, you know, happy holidays is a nice day. Hey, happy holidays. You say happy Hanukkah on Hanukkah. You say Merry Christmas on Christmas. Otherwise, or happy solstice, happy Yule on that day. Otherwise, it's happy holidays, 29 of them, celebrating the return of light. It doesn't really feel that way because we haven't, like, in a lot of areas, kicked into winter, especially down here in South Florida. But it is. Winter solstice is the time of year where astrologically and astrophysically, I don't know, the sun begins, it goes stationary for a couple days, and then it slowly begins its ascent into the sky again. Up to this point, it's been descending ever since it's reached its zenith on summer solstice. So it's a pretty interesting time of year. And we are celebrating the return of light. We are celebrating the mothers that birthed the light, as so many of them do. Santa Lucia, Guadalupe just had her feast day the other day. And for all of those who would like an awesome rundown of all the winter solstice goddesses, I had Selena Fox on last Thursday. It's in the archives of Goddess Alive Radio. Check it out. Nobody does winter solstice goddesses like Selena Fox. Every time I thought she'd run out of a goddess, she came up with another one. And there were some that I didn't even know. I mean, like, never heard of. She's amazing. So, and Circle Sanctuary has some really wonderful things planned. So, anyway, check out the archives. It is well worth it. And I just have a few announcements before we bring on our spectacularly amazing goddess author, priestess, goddess woman, Renee Starr. I'm so delighted. I'm really excited to talk to her tonight. But let's do our housekeeping first. First of all, mysteryschoolofthegoddess.net. So we have welcomed some really amazing teachers and instructors and priestesses to Mystery School of the Goddess in this past year. And just in recent weeks, we've added Molly Reamer, who's Woods Priestess, many of you know. Her business is Bridget's Grove, which is those amazing little sculptures. We have Normandy Ellis will be coming for the new year. Laurie Ann Lumby, who is the author of Song of the Beloved. She is a Magdalene priestess, as well as our normal, you know, we say normal now because, you know, we're used to them, but our awesomely wonderful instructors that have been with us throughout the year, Ann Key, Catherine Ravenwood, Laura Amazoni, Susan Harper, Brandy Ostett, all of them, Jalisha Bonheim. I mean, we just have had an amazing year. It's not over yet, not by a long shot. And our special guest tonight, Renee Starr, is one of the newest additions to Mystery School of the Goddess. And I want to send everybody over to mysteryschoolofthegoddess.net, as you know, which is where we keep all of our awesome courses. So we have several courses that have launched. Two of them, several of them have launched today. Two are by Renee Starr. They're her first two with Mystery School of the Goddess. And I just want to send out big sugar plum fairy kisses to our audience and our tribe, who has welcomed her so amazingly by signing up for the Moon Magic Spells free course, did you hear that? And also for those who are signing up and have signed up for the Nine Moons Lunar Priestess course. The Nine Moons Lunar Priestess course, we're going to talk about that a little bit with tonight with Renee, but I just want to tell you it's a pretty amazingly, just awesome course. You get something every 30 days for nine moons. And Renee just had her mouth in her throat going, oh, every day, no, every 30 days. And it is beautiful. Renee's work is beautiful. So same with the Moon Magic Spells. Check it out. That is free. It's gorgeous as well. Laurie Ann Lumbee, The Introduction to Mary Magdalene, for those who are interested, is also free. And Susan Harper has released Joyful Yule, another new free Sabbath course, and she's going to be doing those every pagan Sabbath, Wiccan pagan Sabbath, for those who are interested in some of the Sabbath Wheel of the Year celebrations. Susan has done an amazing job with the Joyful Yule, and she's covered off not only goddess, but gods of Yuletide. So there you go. Get in there and sign up. The Introducing Mary Magdalene is also a free course with Laurie Ann Lumbee, and Laurie will be releasing her full-on Mary Magdalene course in January. I cannot wait. I'm so excited. So there's three freebies. Share them with your friends. Share them through your social media networks. These things are free. And what an amazing way for you all to get to know our instructors and Mystery School of the Goddess and check out our platform. And, it's all really very exciting. So I hope you check all of those out. We have tons of offerings in there. More coming. I can't believe it. More coming. If you are looking for New Year excitement, a way to kick off the new year, Molly Reamer has a Kala Mundala course, and Brandy Ostett has a Creating Your Soul course, which is daily prompts, and yours truly will be coming out with a Sacred Space course in the next day or two. That will be a self-study as well to take you through the new year. So, we've got it going on at Mystery School of the Goddess. Everybody hop over there. I also want to remind everybody, and then we can finally get to talking about Renee and her awesomely gorgeous book, which I have here. I'm going to thump it. Can I thump it for you guys? I mean, thump it in a nice way. See, it's beautiful and just like a drum. And I just want to remind everybody, Mother House Goddess Shop, we're MH Goddess Shop on Etsy, and I will be shipping things out, through the 21st, 22nd, as soon as the orders are coming in the next couple of days, I will endeavor to get them out very quickly. So if you are looking to order and you want it before winter solstice, time is counting down. If you want it before Christmas, it is as well. In mind, I think everybody is trying to get that together. If you need some ideas, go to goddessgiftguide.com or motherhouseofthegoddess.com and click on our free download, the Holiday Goddess Gift Guide. More than 35 women have come together to share their businesses, their creations, their books, everything imaginable with you for the holiday season. There's some really great specials in there. Check it out. It's a free download. And, support small business, because isn't that what our tribe, our ecosystem, everything is all about, is supporting each other. Plus, there's some really great ideas for goddess gifting in the gift guide. All right. That's my patter for the moment. We only have one more Goddess Alive show. That'll be this coming Thursday with Audrey Allison. It'll be a free tarot reading night, so make sure you tune in. Otherwise, Brandy and I will be here on Monday the 21st. Not here, I'm sorry, no. We'll be on Mystery School, but it's free. Join us for a winter solstice chat, meditation. We're going to hang out and usher in that return of light with all of you. But tonight and Thursday night kind of do it for Goddess Live Radio, and then I'm taking a little bit of a hiatus from that until January. So I'm pretty excited. I've got lots of catching up to do. You can imagine I have this gorgeous stack of books. And at the top of that gorgeous stack of books is Renee Starr's book, You Are Woman, You Are Divine. First of all, I love the title. As we're talking, if everybody wants to hop over, check out backtothegoddess.com, Ancient Wisdom for the Modern Woman. It's a beautiful site. You can get a free ebook, The Lunar Wisdom. There's shopping to be done. I mean, shopping. Who doesn't like to shop? I mean, there's Kaiyafi and there's just beautiful, beautiful offerings. So go check it out. Okay, so You Are Woman, You Are Divine is, as it is annotated here, the modern woman's journey back to the goddess. I wanted to share with all of you. It's available on Amazon. It's available on Renee's site, backtothegoddess.com. It is really one of the most beautiful books that I've seen published. It has gorgeous photography in it. It has gorgeous graphics in it. And everything about it feels quite lush. There are stories about goddesses. There are goddess practices. There are reminders of remembering. And I say that remembering as we seek to remember ourselves in goddess. And Renee has done an absolutely beautiful job in that. There are spells. There are sacred baths. There are oracles. There are visions. I cannot recommend this book more. It really is a lovely, lovely job. So let's dissect it a little bit. Talk about goddess for the next hour and 20 minutes with Renee Starr, who is a mythologist, a goddess storyteller, artist, and life coach. And You Are Woman, You Are Divine is her newest. And there's a companion book to it, too, which is so super cool. So, Renee, are you there?
I am.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Enjoying every moment of your description of my book. I'm like, oh, lovely. Thank you so much. Thank you for your kind words.
Oh, you are so welcome, and they are very well deserved. I mean, it really is. It's an absolutely gorgeous book, as I've told you before, and I want to share with our audience. I mean, you really do have an artistic touch to everything you do, from the creations that are now in Mystery School. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And, through your book, your website, this is really kind of like a calling, this artistry and bringing it into goddess world for you.
Yes, it is. And someone once asked me, of all the things that you do creatively, what's the one that brings you home? And it took me a moment because I love being an artist. It is a joy. But writing and teaching, that's my jam. That's it. That's where I blossom like a giant flower. So when I can put all of it together, the art, the writing, and the teaching, it's ecstatic for me. And today, launching the two classes on Mystery School, I'm a little high, I have to say, because I've had hundreds of emails and lots of communication and such beautiful welcoming. I'm just, honored and touched by all of the love that was sent my way today, and I'm really grateful.
I'm so excited. And I am too. I mean, our tribe, man, they got on that. They looked at that and went, we need some of that.
Yes, they did. And it's so exciting, for a writer to actually see, on Amazon, you don't get to see for a while what you're doing. And, on my website, when I sell books, I can see immediately, oh, this happened. This many people found me. I touched this many lives. But Amazon's a little bit more remote. You don't get your report right away. And this was such immediate gratification, because that's what a writer wants, is to touch the public and to have the public respond. And that is a joy to any creative person.
It is. It is. And our women and men that are involved with Mother House and Mystery School,
mm-hmm.
I have to say, they're really fantastic about emailing. I always
mm-hmm.
love, after a launch course or throughout a course, I get, like, as you said, the most beautiful emails sometimes. You're just going, oh, man, that, like, made my day, you know?
It's
so
yes.
cool.
And it's so beautiful. And, you know, I've Kimberly, this is something that's so interesting to me. 3 years ago when I started to write this book, I made a decision that I was going to be the kind of author that was accessible, that would answer her emails within 24 to 48 hours, would be able to have conversations with every single person who reached out to me. And I am maintaining that. And it's something that I find infuses this work with reality. Because when you write something and put it into the world, or you create a painting and you put it up, you just don't know where it goes.
Right.
You know, you're not in personal contact, and that personal contact to me is very goddess-like, to know that, you know, you're reaching and touching and being involved in someone's life. It's really beautiful.
Oh, my gosh. That's such a great way to put it, isn't it? And I think that mm-hmm. is what is so cool about the online courses and the digital learning
yeah.
and everything. It really gives us a way. I mean, social media kind of ups the game with being able to access people and have them access you back and make comments.
Mm-hmm.
But then to get them into this amazingly beautiful space
yes.
to really share, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. It really is incredible.
It is. It's a virtual temple.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. Yes, that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I love it.
Yeah, so just wait. Just you wait, because, you know, as they start to interact and leave comments and everything, oh, my gosh, it'll be amazing. So,
so I'm
really excited to have you. So thank you so much.
Aww.
Let's talk about this book, because, you know, really, I think that was the first thing, you know, when you sent me your book. And I remember, you know, I was opening it and I leafed through, you know, I'm a book person. I only just started mm-hmm. reading on Kindle like a week ago, honestly. It's really funny.
Mm-hmm.
But books like this, I could never read on Kindle. I can read fiction. But anyway, I touch it. I like to fondle my books. Can I say that?
Yes.
I fondle my books, you know.
Yeah.
And I look at them, and your book is visually really beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was very important to me that that happened. I'm very drawn visually. In fact, I'm so visual, it's almost annoying to people who try to explain things to me, because I have to visualize everything. So for me, not to have a visual gorgeousness, especially in a book that I, you know, produced, I really, it was essential. And the book designer, Susan, and she's also one of the publishers, was very, very amazing in bringing to life every single one of my visions. So her hand is in that, too. It was really a collaborative. We were both illustrating this and designing it. It was really something.
It's really beautiful. So you said that you started this 3 years ago. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, I thought I would be done in 6 months.
I have to tell
you,
it's hefty. I mean, you've got a hefty 300-plus
yeah.
page book here, easy. I mean, it's
When they told me the final count of pages, I literally had to sit down. I couldn't believe that was what I did. I thought, you know, they asked for a 150-page book, 200 max, and I told them I would have it done in 6 to 8 months. And it took 3 years and 338 pages later. And I'm very pleased, of course, but shocked. I was like, wow, that really, it took it out of me. The goddess sent me on a journey through that book. I literally lived every single chapter. She sent me through the paces. And every chapter leveled me and rebuilt me and sent me through all of the emotional and spiritual and physical and, you know, shamanic journey that I had hoped every reader would go through.
It's amazing to me, as we prepare curriculums or writings or anything, how very present goddesses,
yeah.
and how it's so emotional and initiatory.
Yeah. Yep, it is. Well, that's her nature, though. You know, she is all about that. She is the mystery. She is the unseen, the unknown, the unveil or the unrevealed until she unveils herself. And so all of that is initiatory. It is shamanic, and it is secret, and it's something that you have to go looking for. And when you find it, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it is. It's everywhere. When she sort of turned that key for me, she was everywhere. I couldn't not know her, not see her. And that to me was a life of devotion. You know, that's what I put myself through, was a life of devotion. And that's, oh, God, I'm just, it's beautiful.
Oh. So tell me, Renee, how are you different today than you were before you began the book?
Wow. Who had chills when you asked that? That is a profoundly wonderful question. It's interesting. I have, the moment the book came out, I was in a bit of shock, and I couldn't quite make a connection to what had just happened. This is a lifelong dream come true, to have a book published, to have it in the world, to have my life's work on paper, to have my devotion exposed, you know, to become a public figure. All of that is a life purpose, you know, manifested and a dream come true. And I think I was in shock for a good 6 months, or actually not 6 months because it hasn't been open 6 months, but I would say the first month or two, just absolute shock. And
yeah.
Then wonder, and then gratitude, and now excitement.
Yeah.
So the difference between before and after is the direction of my life. I have to be honest. It's really like if my life were a ship, I would be yelling "coming about" at the top of my lungs. You know, because it's the sails are turning around, you know, everything's turning towards this. And so my whole life is just moving towards this. And I'm holding on to the rope for that sail for dear life. Like, here we go. Okay. Not sure what's going to happen, but it's beautiful. It's very humbling in the most lovely of ways.
Yes. I find that is, for me, you know, and as we talk about how our vocation, how our service manifests itself in the world, you know, and for some priestesses, it's very, you know, it's very social justice and social activism geared. And, you know, others are community priestesses and others are, you know, just certain kinds of priestesses. So it's always interesting to me. For me, it's always been devotion. I'm extremely devotional, no matter how I come at any deity, practice, whatever, devotion starts first with it. So if you were to say how your service manifests in the world and through your book, how would you define that?
I would define it as, if I could use the priestess moniker, which I just love, adore, and wear with humility, is a priestess of spirituality, a priestess of teaching. And so I've devoted myself to uncovering and discovering ancient wisdom that we can use today. Because today, and I think you and I have said this and had a good chuckle over it, today we do not get stoned, hung, or burned for doing it.
Right.
So I'm shouting it from the mountaintops. I'm admitting openly, yes, I'm witchy, I'm goddessy, I devote my life to her, I follow her, yes, this is who I am. And I'm not willing nor interested in hiding. So I'm in devotion to sharing this, to alerting, guiding, gathering as many women to begin their journey back to the goddess, to the divine feminine, both in the world and within themselves, to really opening that back up.
I love that. I really do. I think that is so vital for women everywhere, you know, is to find that divine feminine flame within and without, you know, and to be able to gather together.
Mm-hmm.
It's so powerful, and it's life changing, really.
Yes.
Life changing,
and world changing.
Yeah,
you know, we are out of balance. We are very out of balance. As a life coach, I have 90% of the women sit down in front of me, say, I don't know what's wrong with my life, but here's what's happening. And I instantly identify, oh, your masculine is overactivated.
Mm.
And that's what's happened. So we are, you know, we have masculine. It serves great purpose. You know, women have the essence of masculine in them. It serves this great purpose, but it's overactivated. And it's over arcing the feminine. And it's almost diminishing our feminine. And so today in the Facebook book club, I've been discussing with the women that, you know, how would your life look if your feminine essence were leading rather than your masculine? And some of them, you know, brought forth the most beautiful visions of their life and how different it would be. And it is different when your feminine leads. And so many people ask, well, what about a woman in power? How can she be feminine? I say, well, a woman in power should be a woman of power. Because that is her feminine. When she is of her feminine power, she doesn't need to be in power at all. She
mm-hmm.
is power, because that is the power in the world.
And you know what's so interesting about all of that, Renee, too, I think, is that what we define as masculine, we need to reclaim as feminine in some cases, such as power,
mm-hmm.
you know, or such as assertiveness, aggressiveness.
Yes.
I mean, some of that, yes. you know, there's a little bit here we need to reclaim. Excuse me. And certainly, I mean, looking at goddesses like Kali and Sekhmet,
yes.
and the goddesses who go to war, and
yes.
are the same goddesses who nurture and are goddesses of sexuality and
mm-hmm.
the feminine. So we have very, very powerful role models, potent role models
we
and goddesses
do.
For everything. We don't have to say, look, it's masculine. No, it was feminine before it was masculine.
Yes. Well, the essence of everything the masculine is trying to accomplish, the essence at the core, actually exists in the feminine, which is what you're describing, and I love that. And it's interesting, when I was doing the research for the book, and Kali has been one of my my girls, so to speak, my gals, my goddess gals, for many, many years, Kali Ma. And when I did some further research of her, I found something I had never read before, and that was, to the uninitiated, meaning to the one whose eyes are still veiled, when they witness Kali, she appears ferocious, hideous, frightening, and intimidating. But to those that are initiated, to those whose eyes are unveiled, they see her as the protective, nourishing, warrior-ass mother, and they're able to know that aspect of her.
That quote by Vivekananda is one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites. Yes.
Yes.
That those who look on her and find her terrifying, that he doesn't understand that because he only looks at her and sees mother. And yes,
yes.
you hit it right on. Absolutely.
Yes. And that's where we as women who are, you know, trying to make our way in the world and make a big splash again and find, you know, this harmony again where the masculine and the feminine are existing in harmony in the world, not patriarchal, not matriarchal, but together as beloved, the way it should be, united, yin-yang. And so we have to call upon that Kali Ma essence, and we have to unveil our eyes.
So true. I wonder, as I'm looking at your book, and I'm going to share with our listeners, and thank you. God, we've got a lot of people that dialed in tonight. So,
oh, yay.
It's so cool.
Yay.
I don't think after, like, everybody who tunes in online, but we've got at least 30 people on the board tonight. So I'm very excited to see that. That people dialed in that way. So hello, everybody. For our listeners, you picked several goddesses, and I'm going to tell the goddesses that we're focused on in your book are Lilith and Yemaya, White Tara, Radha, Cassandra, White Buffalo, Calfwoman, and Eve. These are some really interesting goddesses. So what was your process, And how did you whittle down to these?
Oh, Kimberly, I had nothing to do with this. They came to me. I was literally an instrument. I have never channeled anything so powerfully in my entire life. There are two other goddesses that open and close the book, Nut and Isis, and they all came to me one by one in dreams and woke me and in meditations and downloaded. I would be pulling over on the side of the road to write things on my phone, to do voice messages, because they just kept downloading their stories, and they said, refresh us, bring us into the modern world. And that's what I did, is I retold, I rewrote these stories, and they had very different spins, some of them, you know, to the point of complete departure from their original ancient story. But I listened, I was in awe of the beauty of their story. So they really came to me. And I was so pleased at the gorgeousness and the array from every, you know, area in cultures for them to come through this way.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
Did you have any moments of wondering, you know, if these goddesses were, I know they were channeled, but were the right ones? So, you know, sometimes we overthink this.
Yes.
And I say that from experience.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'll admit that I did question, and I did, you know, say, oh, I don't know. And then they would come in so strongly. Like, I never, these were the ones that came in at the beginning, and they were the ones that remained at the end. They kept, you know, they were very insistent, very strong energies, very powerful energies, and they delighted me. They entertained me. They had breakfast with me, lunch, dinner. You know, they slept with me. They woke up with me. They just infiltrated my life to the point of, I, of course, knew them very, very well. And I have to admit, I just have to honor this for Miss Lilith, who almost took over the entire book. And I said to my, I called my publisher one day, and I said, listen, Lilith wants to be the whole book. And they were quiet for just a moment, and they said, well, could you please tell her that she gets one chapter?
Well, why don't you tell her, right?
Yeah, I'm like, okay, I'll do my best. And they said, maybe you could write a full book about her another time, but we really need her to just stay in one chapter right now. I'm like, all right, I'll tell her.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. But you do actually, and, you know, and I want to say that you have woven in so many of the other goddesses so well. I mean, the Shekinah and Ma'at and Shakti. I mean, you've mentioned so many of them, you know, throughout the book. I mean, you really give an amazing picture for women who are new to goddess or who have been working in it, or as priestesses for a long time. So I think I want to applaud you for that, because, you know, that's a difficult balance to strike, where you can intrigue people who go, what's this all about? But also intrigue those of us who have been practicing for 20 years or more, 10 years or more, you know, all of that.
Yes.
I think that's a tough balance to strike.
Thank you for saying that. And it was something that was discussed early on in the conception of the book, is, Renee, what is your mission? What's your target audience? And I said, everyone. Of course, publishers, they look at me and they're like, okay, now, really, what's your target audience? And I said, all women. I want all women, the mainstream woman, the pagan woman, the Wiccan woman, the Dianic woman, every woman who is interested in her own goddessness and interested in goddess, to feel at home in this book. And the way to do that is through our mythic history, through our sacred story, because it delights us, it entreats us, it invites us, it causes us to find commonality, collective consciousness. It makes us feel home. And that's why it fits for everyone, is because there's mythic sacred story here.
Yes. Now, how did you accomplish your research? You know, because you've got some unusual goddesses here. I mean, some that I'm familiar with what's available. You know, especially like Eve. She's tough because we have to rebuild her. Lilith, we have to rebuild her. You know, Yemaya, as an Aberisha, I know there's not a lot out there in mainstream.
There's not.
You know? So...
Well, It was arduous. I think that's why it took 3 years, is because each goddess wanted me to experience her outside of and in addition to any research that I did, any book research, any online research, any meditative research. She wanted me to know her intimately, each and every single one of them. Even Isis, who I have been aligned with for years, almost my entire adult life. And even she came to me and said, my story will be told through my sister, Neftis. That is who will tell my sister my story. And I was on my knees. You know, I've painted Isis. I've worshipped, devoted, visited her in Egypt. And this, to me, was the most beautiful gift she has ever given. It's the introduction to her sister and allowing her sister, who has quite a sense of humor. We never guess that from a funerary goddess. You know, she's a little solemn, but has quite a sense of humor, and she's in deep grief and mourning. She has a deep sadness within her that all women carry from the beginning of time. This is our collective wound, and Neftis carries this for us. And so she tells the story of Isis and Osiris, and that to me was stunning. But truly, they wanted me to live with them for a little bit before writing about them and presenting them.
Well, I think that's so interesting, too, about the Isis and Neftis connection with you, is because Isis and Neftis, interestingly, are both pillars of Mother House and Mystery School of the Goddess. Quite unknowingly, when Mystery School of the Goddess was launched and Mother House of the Goddess was launched, Mystery School was launched on the feast day for Neftis, Mother House the year before on an Isis feast day. The funny part about all that, like I said, it was quite unintentional on my part, and it just happened. And the funny part too was, I'm a deity rescuer, meaning I go shopping and deities find me and I have to take them away when I see them, like in Walmart and Home Goods and thrift stores. It was right after Mother House had launched, I went into Ross and I found this 13-inch high black Isis.
Oh, my goodness, you're kidding.
Yeah, and her horn was damaged. And I snapped it because all I could think was, oh, my gosh, she's damaged. They're going to throw her away. They can't throw her away. I mean, like, it'd be horrible. Mm. And I brought her home, and she's in her gold, and, you know, she's so beautiful. And she's so amazing. $5 later, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
It was so funny. And when Mary Lamondo, our resident astrologer and Egyptologist, came over to my house and she saw her, she's like, her eyes lit up. She goes, where did you get that? And I said, you can't have her. She's here from Mother House. She didn't want an altar. She wanted to be on the Mother House altar. So it was very interesting because it's a black Isis connection of bringing in that Neftis energy as well. You know, that's kind of funny too. With, you know, again, it is. It's like Mystery School, Mother House. Yay! You know, it's all on the planet. Yeah. Who was your favorite? I know that's like hard to, it's like asking to pick your favorite child, but
I know it is hard.
The most
The most fun writing, gosh, I would have to say, as far as the writing, like if I looked at who just, like, how can I describe this? It's so visceral, I want to put it into words. Who lit me up, who really caused a movement in my soul was White Buffalo Calf Woman.
Really?
Yes, even though Yemaya is, I've been working with her for many years, and, you know, I'm very connected to the ocean, and so I'm very connected to her, even though Isis, I can go on and on, this one, that one, I love. For some reason, when White Buffalo Calf Woman came through, there was such reverence from her to me as a woman, and I have never felt that. I've never experienced that from a man, from a fellow, you know, a sister, you know, I was going to say a fellow woman, that's a hilarious statement, but, you know, a sister goddess. I've never really felt that reverence towards me as a woman. And that, was the heart of the book, is that I needed to feel the sacredness of my own womanness in order to write a book about it. And so White Buffalo Calf brought that for me. And I have such an earthly connection to the Native peoples and the Native spirituality. And I keep searching through my lineage, hoping that we're going to find a crumb of some Native lineage. We're not. You know, I have Persian, I have Greek, I have Russian, but I have no Native, you know, Native American. And I keep hoping that we're going to uncover one teeny tiny grain of Native American. It's not there, but my soul has a lot of it. So my soul's lineage really responded to her.
That's amazing. Yeah, the Native American goddesses is very interesting. They will talk to me to pass along a message or for someone else, but I don't personally have a deep connection with them. Although when they come in, I feel them. I mean, they are.
Yes. Yes,
but it's,
they are.
It's a very interesting thing. So then taking that into mind, who would you say was the most challenging to write?
Oh, interesting. I know, I love this question. It's really a beautiful question. The most challenging to write, I would have to say, and an interesting challenge, was Lilith, who is so huge. She is awesome in the biblical sense of the word. She is awesome in a historical sense of the word, where you are literally looking up and up and up, and she's so large and so big and so encompassing and so part of us that it was hard to contain her in one story, one chapter. So for me, that was, I mean, I have files and files and files of information that I didn't put in the book because I had to fillet her, so to speak. So that was the difficulty. She wasn't difficult as a goddess or as connection, but she was difficult to put into one chapter, into one story. But it came out very beautifully, and I've had many women say that that's the chapter they are really responding to, because our power, she represents power in the book, our power needs to be reclaimed as women, and so that's where we start.
It's so true. I mean, Lilith, she is such a talent in so many ways. And her recent, you know, is challenging as well, I know, because, you know, she has no cult. She was never worshipped as a goddess, you know, and so that's challenging in and of itself, to create rites or practices around a goddess who was treated as a demon for thousands of years, you know.
And
so it's interesting.
It is, and I'll tell you, when I did the research on her and when I delved into the ancient Kabbalistic and Judaic texts about her and the old Yiddish folklore about her, she is this demon cautionary tale. She's been obliterated. Her story has never been told in the culture that she actually emanates from. And what happened was, In the modern world, in the neo-pagan movement, there are cults of Lilith, but they are blood cults, and they are dark, negative darkness cults. So the demoness Lilith is worshipped, which is something I do not promote in the book whatsoever. And she asked me, in a way that was very interesting, she came to me in so many meditative states, but she asked me, please rewrite the story. Tell who I am. Tell others who I really am, and rewrite the curses against me. Welcome me back. And that's what I did. There's a beautiful ancient translation of a spell plate that the ancient Egyptian people used to put. They would bury this beautiful simple ceramic plate that was incanted, engraved with incantations for spells against certain demons and demonesses and spirits. and they would take this dish and they would plant it in, underneath their front door, like right at the entranceway, and they felt it was an amulet and a talisman against evil. And many of these were written against Lilith to prevent her from coming into the home, and she feels so unwelcome that I took that incantation and rewrote it into an invocation to welcome her back. And when I did that, I have chills right now. It took me days to write again. It took me 2 weeks before I could ever write another word again because it was just echoing within me, and I kept rereading it and rereading it in awe that it came through me and in awe that it exists in the world.
That is, it's extremely powerful. And I find it, from my standpoint, so amazing that, you know, there is an amazing connection, an incredibly potent connection through Lilith with women of mm-hmm. Jewish origin. And
yes.
and that, you know, as you know, in the 60s and 70s, there were so many reclamation rituals and things that were, you know, in the feminist movement that were done to reclaim her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really amazing to see that. And and I think it just, as you said, it is, it welcomes her back. It
mm-hmm.
it turns that screech owl, you know, into the water that she is. And it's really amazing to me. I love working with her. I have great respect.
I do too.
I do too. You know, as I said to one woman, Lilith doesn't play. I mean, so be careful.
No.
You know,
yeah.
Play.
Yes, and if you read the story that I tell about my meeting of her in the high desert, she is something. She is really something. She is the wind. She is the spirit of the desert, the spirit of earth, and in such a feminine way, but the kind of feminine that is ancient and primal and primitive. So she pulls that up from deep inside of you and causes it to rise. And when that happens, you feel it, and it's almost frightening. And if you just maintain, if you just allow her to come through and that to come through, your own essence to come through you, you are empowered by it. Like it infuses your bones. It's really something.
That is a great way to put it. She doesn't do well with challenge. So if you knee jerk her,
yeah,
you might have a power issue on your hand.
Yes. You know, it's interesting. You're right. Her personality, it's funny. She's not mother. She is sort of leader. She's teacher. She's priestess. She's shamaness. But she is not mother. She's like, get your act together. Come to me. Let's do the work. So I put her in the category of Kali Ma, of even Pele, you know, the warrioress goddesses. And, you know, she speaks of the desert women. You know, she hails from being a desert woman who is tough. You know, in the desert women, they're very, very strong, but also very, very, very sweet. And so when you get into that place with her, you know, when you find her heart space, you are loved forever by her.
Yes, yes. And when you welcome her, you know,
yes.
when you welcome her, that is some of the most potent work to be done with Lilith.
Mm-hmm.
Radha was an interesting choice, I thought. Can you share
yes.
a little bit of experience of Radha?
Yes, I can, Radha. She's something else. I didn't realize what a little spitfire she was until her story came through. You know, the story of Radha and Krishna has delighted me for many years, and I've always peripherally looked at it and studied it and never really delved into it. But Radha is she's a tantrika, and she's a sacred sexuality priestess. And so she comes to remind us that we have this running through our veins, that sexuality and passion are what women bring into the world, into relationships, into their work. And she reminds us to be delighted with the sweetness, the joys, the beauty of the world, to fall in love with yourself, with this life, with a partner, to be love, to be sexy. And she really, you know, she really comes in and tells us to let go, to relinquish, to surrender to love, to passion, to our sexuality. And many women have a very difficult time doing that.
It's true. It's true. You know, what is so funny with Radha is that I met her through Krishna. So for me, that was probably the only Shakti that I went backwards on, interestingly. I love the Shakti, love them. But Krishna has always had this weird place in my heart. I mean, I don't quite know how to explain it, and I just delight. And then when I had my son, who's now going to be 19 soon, but I don't know if you've ever seen the image of Krishna, the butter thief, right? And he's got these dark curls, and he's this little chubby. My son looked exactly like that, except with blonde curls. I mean, we laughed holding him next to the poster I had in his room of that, because he looked like, and obviously he wasn't blue, but you know, he looked like, and we laughed and we just thought, oh my God. And he was just like that. He had this joy around him that was so Krishna, you know, that, that pure joy. And then to meet Radha through that joy, that's how I met her. So like I said, she's the only one I went back that way. I went through the consulate to the Shakti. That's the only one. But she's an amazing goddess. She really
she
and a lot
is.
Of people just meet her as this, oh, you know, the other half of Krishna. But boy, she doesn't, you know, mess around either in some way.
No, she doesn't. She comes in and she, it's interesting, in the Hindu religion, when I delved really deeply into the research, I found that it is understood that Radha and Krishna are one. They are two sides of the same essence. So she doesn't really come forth the way he does because that's not the feminine essence. The feminine essence is receptive and the masculine is projective. So he comes and projects the energy of them and she, you know, receives. And so they roll around in the world entwined, loving each other, ecstatic, sexually ecstatic, passionately ecstatic. And they love each other and they teach that love of union, union of the masculine and feminine within you and union of the masculine and feminine physically in the world between a man and a woman, even in same-sex relationships, that essence will surface, that masculine and feminine will surface in the partners. So they just teach that. They teach this is one essence, two aspects. And that's
beautiful.
How we heal.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's so beautifully said. It really is. And that's so cool. I love that. And I know, it's so neat. And you chose another very interesting goddess. You know, I worked with the Greeks for a long time. And I will say that Cassandra, I have experienced through Clytemnestra, interestingly, who was a priestess of Hecate, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Tell us about your experience with Cassandra, because, you know, Apollo inserts himself there quite a bit.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Well, Cassandra was interesting. Just like Lilith and Eve, Cassandra is not a technically accurate goddess, although they are the archetypes. So they represent these archetypes for us. And I place them in goddessship because they deserve it. Cassandra, you know, really asked that her myth be rewritten slightly so that she doesn't go mad, that she simply learns to accept and live with her voice and her intuition. And women's voice these days, you know, our voice, our presence in the world has been so quiet for so long. And when one of us does rise and is heard, it's one voice among, you know, millions, and we need to balance that. So she came forth asking, you know, at first I thought she was all about intuition, and we would talk about the oracle, which there's quite a bit in the chapter, but she really in the end said, I am truly about the voice of women being respected, because the Oracle of Delphi was an extraordinarily respected woman. She was held above the status of men. So that was unusual, unheard of, and one of a kind during her time. And whoever held that position was considered elevated above men. And men listened to the voice of a woman because she spoke for the goddess, and she spoke on behalf of Apollo.
Absolutely. I think you did a really tremendous job with Cassandra because, you know, she's a tough one, and it is. And, you know, it is so important to realize that, interestingly, some of the ones that you have chosen have been ones that have been most villainized, demonized, degraded, you know.
Misunderstood.
And Cassandra, make no mistake, was extremely degraded. I mean, you know, Agamemnon dragging her off to be a second wife, which, you know.
She was demoted beyond demotion.
And to be mad. And if you think about it, you know, that Cassandra's myth has, and the proclamation by Apollo has stood in male communication. You know, when they look at a woman and go, you're crazy. You know what I mean? Like, and you think about that, and they kind of do it in an offhanded way. And it's very interesting to me because every time I hear that, I think, oh, Cassandra.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, over time with the rise of patriarchal leadership, over time we have no choice but to trust them. And, you know, we can distrust them as well, of course. But they, you know, the patriarchs are leading the world. And so we have really no choice but to sort of say, well, I have to trust or I have to live miserably. And, you know, in the story, I really saw how this came through where Cassandra trusted Apollo by devoting her life as a priestess to him. By, really being in devotion to him, she trusted him, and he really betrayed her and really did not support her. And that doesn't mean it's man-hating or that we shouldn't trust men. It means we need to trust ourselves. We need to honor our voice. We need to become strong again and let our voice really be heard, regardless of who does not like it, regardless of who does not accept it.
I think what's interesting about Apollo is that Apollo is precocious as a god, right? So who is he? He's the sun god. He's been told that he shines greater than anyone else in the world. But Apollo also, in having a twin sister, Artemis, and, you know, and his mother and everything, there's a certain femininity under Apollo that's very interesting to me, where if there is pushback, he will, this is probably, you know, kind of almost blasphemous, but like, you know, to say it succinctly, he will cave. He will cater to
He'll
the feminine.
Yield.
If he pushed
he
back.
Yes, it's more of a yielding. And what it is I believe, and Kimberly, this is beautiful that you bring this up, that yielding within him is why he supported the oracles of Delphi, is why he realized at some point, this is my intuition of him, is he realized, I must honor the mother. I must honor the mother. I want to be in rulership. I want to be the big guy. I want to be the main squeeze of the town and the world. But I want to honor the mother too. And so he will yield to the feminine because he knows it's the best thing.
Well, and he also, like, and see, from an intuitive standpoint too, which is something I'm working on is with Pythia, is that I don't believe he slayed her. I believe she allowed him, they brokered a deal, if you will, an agreement.
Yeah.
She is the earth speaker. She's the one who knew the writing on the wall, and it was time for the Apollonian rise. It was time for the patriarchal rise. The world needed to experience that. And, you know, I do believe in that. I believe that she withdrew and allowed him. And so I think there is a part of him that knows that, you know, when you did it wrong, Pythia came up, she destroyed the oracle, she's going to eat you. And that's going to be it. But it's an interesting, certain of the gods, I mean, Dionysus is certainly another one who absolutely not only yields, but embodies femininity to some extent. So it is interesting on some of the male deities. And certainly one of my favorites is, you know, in Hindu is Ganeshi. So there you go.
Oh, yes. beloved Ganesha. Yes, very much so.
So I really like, too, because I'm a huge correspondence nerd, big time. I love it. I've always envisioned writing, like, correspondence encyclopedias for all the goddesses one day. Mm. And so I really enjoyed your associations at the end of each chapter where you talk about their stones, where you talk about their totems. And so, and I know that for some of these, there is absolutely no reference to this.
Exactly.
So I appreciate the intuitive way that you approach this. I love the Cassandra you gave her, the swan. I just thought that was such a cool idea.
Mm. Thank you.
Yes,
I am very fond of correspondence magic, and I love, and I have a term that I've coined, and so, soon to be a book, Simple Goddess Magic, where you use the everyday, and you really recognize natural association. So Lilith is a dark goddess. Things that are dark are associated with her. That is simple goddess magic.
Yes. Yeah.
So you can really learn to live life like that. And, you know, sometimes women write to me and ask, what can I do for the new moon? And I say, use rose buds, roses that have not blossomed yet. And they say, what about the full moon? I say, oh, use roses in full bloom. Simple goddess magic. So these associations and correspondences are part of systems that are very, they have a history. Their roots are in folkloric herbalisms where like cures like, or the doctrine of signatures where, as an example, a walnut looks like the brain. It must be good for the brain. Well, guess what? It is. You know, so
right.
If we, yes, so these correspondences are natural to us, and by intuiting some of them, I'm actually encouraging women to do the very same. Yes, we have wonderful reference books out there to find these, but you can also go into your own life, into your own intuition, and find it for yourself, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that's absolutely perfect. I mean, you know, it's really fun once you kind of get it. You know, I've studied the Kabbalah for over 20 years. And for me, I think Kabbalistically, so I think in correspondence, you know.
Yes.
It's very interesting. And I really appreciate books that do that. And, you know, you'll find too, I think, and our readers will agree, on Mother House, we do that quite a bit. I do it in Rhythms of the Goddess and everything. I give them the suggested correspondences to kind of trigger that so that you're looking around, you're paying attention. I can't remember which philosopher it says that all things belong to the gods, all things.
Mm-hmm.
So everything you're looking at belongs to a god or goddess. And by looking at it and really thinking about, okay, what element is this and what color is it and what season is it and everything, you can really start to intuit what goddess likes. And goddess likes to be given that which she likes.
She does. She does. That's beautifully said. I love that.
Thank you. I know. I will tell you, really funny. You know, I do a Goddess Wheel of the Year reading, especially at this time of year, it's very popular.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, where you pick a goddess from, you know, for each month and then an overall. And last year, my goddess was Kali. However, she did not bring in, much as your Isis and Nephthys, did not bring in herself as Kali. She brought in her sister, Lalita Devi. And it was really funny because I knew hardly anything about Lalita Devi. But, you know, by mid-January, she was installed on the Shakti altar. And she started from day one. It was the funniest thing, going, I'd like cherry quartz, cherry quartz. I'd like cherry quartz. Did you hear me? I'd like cherry quartz. I really want a cherry quartz. I mean, it was the, I'm telling you, I mean, my goddesses sometimes will drive me mad about, I'd like, you know?
Yes, yes. Oh, that's beautiful.
It's so fun. It's like, you know, when you really start to connect, and that's what I tell, you know, those who are in our courses and stuff, be intuitive. Let them tell you, what do they want? What do they like?
Yes.
You know, and there is no right or wrong necessarily. I wouldn't offer Aphrodite a garlic bulb. It might not work. It might never get laid again, but
right.
I could be intuitive.
Right. But, you know, I think that's the way of the goddess inviting us into relationship with her. And all of her personifications have personalities. Those are the many personalities, many faces of the goddess. And she wants to be in relationship with us. So I think that's her way of getting us kind of involved.
It is. It is. And, of course, altar building and everything is also one of my, you know, frequent times. So I definitely have a reason for the correspondences. So I love that you included that. And your goddess rituals and practices are really beautiful, too. So tell
Thank
us a
you.
Little bit about how you develop these. I know what it takes to develop practices that you are ready to share with the public. Because there is a certain, certain caution. You know, sometimes we go, ooh, is that something to be shared or? Perfect.
Yes. And, you know, I really, at one point in the book, realized about midway through, I think, that it was, I wanted to reveal myself. At you know, very early on in the book, I realized I was having a conversation with the reader, and I wanted to be extraordinarily accessible in the book, so I wanted to speak directly to them from my heart as opposed to just giving them a historical view or a story that is being told by some, you know, unknown person. I wanted to really be personally in the book. So I started to notice that I was revealing more and more of my personal and private ritual and my personal and private experience with my body, with my life, with my devotion, with my relationship to Goddess. And the more I did that, the easier it became to create ritual for women. And I've been teaching for many, many years, many different aspects of all the things that I do and know and love. And ritual is one of my favorite. I've gone from super elaborate to super simple, and it just doesn't matter. It's all stunning and beautiful and fun, and really nourishing is the word I would have to use. It's very nourishing to practice ritual. And so creating this for the book, all I had to do was come up with a template of what was going to be a ritual for every single goddess, and then just let her tell me what her ritual was.
It's amazing what happens when you do that.
Yeah, it is.
Justin, it is. Really, really beautiful. I think it's so cool that women have an opportunity to, you know, really connect at very visceral levels, at very simple levels. You know, I studied ceremonial magic and ritual for many, many, many years. So for me, sometimes it's hard to go, like, I overthink it, you know what I mean? And then I find just the simplest blend or burning or mantra or whatever, that that is where the intense connection happens. So I like that you really, offered women this opportunity to be intuitive, but also to give them a little bit of structure, because I think especially in the beginning, structure is helpful. You know, I get a lot
It acts like a seed. You know, I planted some seeds is what the book did. It, you know, in the ritual areas, those are little seeds in the garden, and they will grow. And so women will be interested in, oh, you mean my bathtub can be made into a sacred bathing temple? Really? And that, yes, it can. And so, you know, for someone, you know, for a woman to look at that and reframe her everyday life into temple life, temple living, or devotional living, even if it's the simplest of simplest, that is a step back, a foot towards the goddess. It's a foot on the journey back to the goddess. So that was the design of it, was these are little seeds I'm planting. I hope they grow in your garden. I hope they take root. And I hope it grows into a glorious goddess tree.
Oh, how beautiful. Well, it certainly is. I cannot recommend it enough. So for our listeners, You Are Woman, You Are Divine by Renee Starr. It's available on Amazon. It's available on backtothegoddess.com. All the links are on Mother House Lesson Blog Talk. And there is also, tell us just a little bit, because I want to also spend a few minutes before we wrap on talking about your courses, which are available now. But tell us just a little bit about your companion journal, which I thought was really clever, really smart to do.
Thank you. There was another chapter. It actually was a chapter. And we really couldn't put any more pages in the book. So we turned it into, it was like, okay, a 500-page book? I don't think so. So we put it into a separate companion journal. And it was a natural extension for women to have a little bit more of the prompt, a little bit more of a space to write and explore and journey with the goddess. And, you know, in every chapter with every goddess, there are some journal prompts, and then the companion journal extends that. So you not only have space to actually go through those prompts, but you have even more information on those goddesses.
I love that. And I will tell you, I like the paper in it because it's nice writing paper.
It is, isn't it? Yes. When I saw that there was an option for cream paper, I almost jumped through the phone and yelled, yes, yes, put the cream paper in there, because that's essential for me. You know, really nice paper to write on is good.
Yes, I know. I just recently, I had ordered a journal for the new year, and I'd ordered it months ago. It was just being published recently, so, you know, it finally arrived. And I opened it, and I was all excited, and the paper was slick.
No, that's blasphemous.
I know, and I was so disappointed. I mean, like, I almost cried. I'm like, I can't write in this.
No. Excuse me, my goodness.
I know, I'm really weird. Like, the people at Office Depot stare at me when I'm in the journal section because I'm in there fondling the paper. Like, am I one of this? Is this going to work for me? You know?
I love it. I think that's wonderful that you allow yourself to have that joy. I think that's simple goddess magic.
Yes, it is. It is. Plus, you know, if I don't like writing in it, I won't write in it. You know, I mean, that simple in the end.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about. Oh, go ahead. Did you have something you want to add?
I was just going to say one thing. My book on the website is on sale until December 25th, and it comes with each order comes with a very special roll-on vial of goddess anointing oil. So, and it's inscribed in gold ink. You know, I signed the book in gold ink. So just letting you know that anyone who wants to buy from the website until December 25th, you do get this beautiful goddess anointing oil. And I'm a natural perfumer, so it's yummy.
Oh, delicious. Okay, so everybody knows now. Do it to it. Backtothegoddess.com, and then you just hit that shop button, you know, which is like our favorite button in the universe.
Yes.
And there you go. Good, good, good. Okay. So let's talk about Mystery School of the Goddess and you joining. So we launched two courses. I say we, you know, as in the royal we.
Yes, we did. We did.
You did all the hard work.
you helped me tremendously. Give yourself credit.
So we've got two gorgeous offerings from Renee up there. And I want to say the first one being a free course of moon magic spells. Let's start there and then we'll move to the nine moons.
Great. Yes, the moon magic is, I've been practicing lunar magic for many, many years, and I consider lunar magic simply the observation and the alignment with the cycle, and then any ritual that you perform with their essence in mind. So waxing moons are increasing, waning moons are decreasing, dark moon is a still period. And so when you align yourself to those essences and perform magic or ritual or ceremony with them in mind, you have amplified not only the work, but your life. And something very interesting happened to me when I was writing the book is that I realized I was writing according to the lunar phases. So there is it's something I discovered that was really, really profound. And when I stopped fighting the fact that, I can't write, but I have to write, when I started to just flow with the moon, I realized when I could write, which was during the waxing phases, oh my goodness, I was up at all hours. I was writing all the time. Things were pouring out of me, easy, easy, easy. And then waning moons, I would rest and research and gather information, and then boom, it would all come forth again. And this became a rhythm for 3 years that was so lovely and so filling, so beautiful. And so practicing any ceremony, ritual, or magic with the light of the moon, as I like to say, and following her, the great mother moon, your life is enriched, your work is enriched, your doings are enriched. And so here's a little mini course of how to work with the moon and work with the four elements. And when you combine those two, you have a very powerful natural magic that occurs, and it really deepens any practice.
Oh, I love that. That's so cool. Well, and judging from our tribe's reaction, they love it too.
Yes, over 100 people have downloaded it in just a few hours. So that's really interesting to me and beautiful. I'm so grateful.
So cool. So cool. So please, to our listeners, check it out, mysteryschoolthegoddess.net. And the other most beautiful offering, that is just so tremendous because I've had a sneak a peek, is the 9 Moons Lunar Priestess Course. So tell us a little bit about this. What's the goal with this and how you developed it?
Well, I have been, as I've been teaching over the years, whenever I use the word priestess, I notice there's this look that comes over a woman's face. And I notice a radiance that emanates from her. And it occurs to me that it was quite lunar, like the moon, when it comes and reveals itself and shines light into the world. The women were becoming like full moons when I said the word priestess. And I'm such a lunar priestess. I am very much in devotion to the lunar light and the great mother moon. And she is just so sacred and special to me. And to put that into a course for every woman. All of my work is designed for the modern woman. So it's for the woman, as you mentioned earlier, who has no idea what the heck I'm talking about but is interested, and for the woman who's been a longtime practitioner and this is a wonderful template for her. So this course is an introduction. It's a way of learning how to be in devotion and with intention, how to live with intention and be in devotion, and how to use the moon to amplify and elevate your life in a feminine, the most feminine way. And it's a beautiful offering. And for very little per month, it's 9 moons, 9 months, you really get a pretty juicy lesson. I like it. So, it's very beautifully presented, and it's juicy. It has lots of information, lots of things to do, and lots of wisdom. And I speak about the blood mysteries, the angels that you can work with the moon, the different herbs, the many, many ways that you can work with the moon and all of its phases, the nine phases of a full lunation.
Beautiful. That's so important. I think, in the modern world, we get out of sync with Mama Moon, with Luna.
Yes, we do.
And, I was just, to me, as I was saying in the intro, I looked out. It was so perfect. I kind of, I was sitting here and I lit everything up and I looked out and there was Isis's crescent moon. Oh. And as we were talking, I watched it just, you know, down into the mountain. And, you know, it's so beautiful when we're able to really connect in such a feminine way. I mean, it calls our wild soul. It really does.
It does. And I like to say one of my favorite phrases is to be female is to be lunar. And when we align with the moon, which governs our sacred blood, which governs all the waters of the world, you know, and the waters of our body, the internal ocean that we have, she governs women's bodies. And so to be in alignment with her, in devotion to her phasing, her waxing and her waning, is to recognize all of that in you, in your life, in your personality, in your mood. So my next book is going to be all about the moon.
I love it. Oh, that's so good. It's so good.
Yes.
And you know, we haven't had a really good, from a goddess spirituality standpoint, because that's primarily the area I read in or focus in. So we have not really had a good moon book in a long time. I'm trying to think,
there's been many single ones that have popped up, and they're mostly spell-based or magic-based, which I love, of course. But we need, and this is something I'll be putting out, is, you know, we need a treasury. We need this is the only book I'll ever need on the moon. And we need it to be a big, fat book on the moon as for women, for everything that we want.
I agree. And, you know, I'm trying to think, like, Mysteries of the Dark Moon, which is Dark Moon then, by Dimitri Borge, I mean, is a nice, juicy dark moon.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Lovely.
Gosh, when I think about, if I were to say to somebody, oh, a book about the moon, and certainly, you know, Grandmother Moon, you know, Z Budapest did it a great job, goddess wise with that. But we haven't really had any recent ones. Tap it off, you know?
Yes. We need a current modern day book of the moon.
Well, wonderful. I look forward. Hopefully it won't be 3 years. We're gonna push it along. Sooner.
Oh, it's gonna take less than 3 years. I've already made a deal with the goddess. She cannot take that long again. I've already made a deal with her.
Oh my goodness. Well, Renee, we're like down to our last few minutes, so it's been so amazing to have you on. I'm so excited. We will have to have you on in 2016 again to talk about some more good, juicy goddess stuff. Is there anything that you would like to share with our listeners, you know, any events coming up or anything like that that you want to tell everybody about?
Yes, thank you. If you're in the Los Angeles area, I am offering a Goddess of the Darkest Night, a woman's winter solstice event, and that's on winter solstice coming up on the 22nd. And you can find that on my website. Coming down the pipeline, lots of wonderful digital courses will be up on Mystery School, all kinds of wonderful offerings in the shop. I have many beautiful ways to connect to the goddess. There's a moon page on my website, so you can really start connecting to the moon. And just wonderful. I love just adding more and more, so keep checking back.
You do. And that's really that's what's so beautiful about all of this is that you've got some really delicious, substantial, you know, free offerings so people can kind of dip their toe in and figure out who is Renee Starr, and then they can jump in with both feet and splash in the puddle. Yeah. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's been such a delight to be here, Kimberly. Thank you so, so much.
Well, thank you very much. We are thrilled to have you, and Renee will also be contributing for Rhythms of the Goddess, our winter edition coming next week, right on the eve of winter solstice. It'll be out. And so stay tuned. And, of course, as I can't say it enough, mysteryschoolofthegoddess.net. Hop over there. You will not regret it. Order the book. And with the holiday special, definitely order it from backtothegoddess.com. You will not regret that either. And you should order two, one for your very best girlfriend, because it's a great gifting book. And what a great price. So
thank you.
Good. Well, we look forward to having you back, and I wish you all the blessings of the season. Thank you so much for your light.
You are so welcome, and thank you for yours. Without you, I don't know where we would be. We would not have this hub and this beautiful mother house, so thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you so much. We'll leave that all up to Goddess. She, you know, she gives me what is. I'm driving the car. That's all the moment.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Good. Well, Renee, thank you again, and can't wait to have you back.
Thanks, Kimberly.
Thank you. And to all of our listeners, thank you. You are the reason for the season, and my gratitude and the blessings and Goddess, and I stand always in awe of your responsiveness and your support. So thank you very much. Don't forget Mother House Goddess Shop, Mystery School of the Goddess, and of course motherhouseofthegoddess.com. Rhythms of the Goddess will be coming out, as I said, on the eve. So it'll be out by the 21st, and winter officially begins on the 22nd. I cannot believe it. And we have a full moon coming up, Christmas. I think it's the first one in like 49 years or something very cool like that. So kind of auspicious. It's like, you know, the union of light and lunar, and I don't know, it's kind of magical. So make it magical. And don't forget to take time for yourself in this very busy, chaotic season. And don't overdo. Make sure you're taking some good downtime. I wish you all the best. I will be back on Thursday, which is the 17th, this Thursday, with Audrey Allison. She's going to be doing some free quickie tarot readings. And you know we love her. This is, what, third, fourth trip back? I love it. So, and it will be our last Goddess Live Radio broadcast of 2015. I can hardly believe it. Do you know the 2-year anniversary of Goddess Live Radio will be on winter solstice? So for all these wonderful, beauteous unfoldings, I thank all of you, and I thank Goddess as well. Have a wonderful night. I am going to drum you out with Circle of Women, Nalini Blossom, and the Glastonbury Women's Choir. And I wish you, again, all the blessings of the season. I will talk to you all Thursday night. Good night.